We just have so much to be thankful to God for. And if nothing else, I heard a preacher just this past week said he woke us up this morning. That's reason enough. And so I'm just grateful to be here for a number of reasons. I'm really elated because in my absence, it was a good absence because Sherry and I were able to spend some time away, having experienced 16 years together in marriage. And as a result, we went on a little trip, and Todd was able to step into this space, and he did just such a magnificent job. If you were here, you understood what I'm talking about, and if you're blessed to listen to it online, I promise you, if you haven't, please go and listen to that exhortation, that message on last week. It was a powerful, powerful message from a shepherd. He is one of our shepherds here. He is one of our pastors here, and it was just such a blessing to me because it really kind of dawned on me. Me being here it really has to be a God thing, because there are so many individuals at this church who could stand up and who could deliver powerful messages and do great exegesis and share wonderful meat from the pulpit. That it's just really a privilege and an honor for me to even be here to do what I'm blessed to do every single day and certainly every single week. So I'm grateful and I'm thankful for that. And I just want to extend my gratitude to this church for embracing my family. It's June 1st. Is actually going to come up on 3 years, believe it or not. It might seem longer than that to some of you. It's certainly shorter. It feels short to me, but June 1st, we're going to be 3 years here. And what a wonderful 3 years it has been. And so, you know, in the Lord, we are just grateful to be here. I do want to share, because I did get a couple photos to share with the group here this morning. On last week, our middle school group were on a retreat. And so this was the group, the entirety of the group that was out last week. On the middle school retreat, and what a beautiful time I know that they had. I didn't have the opportunity, of course, to spend any time with them, but I heard from the pumpkin vine and from the grapevine that they had a really wonderful time. And then this entire weekend, Friday, yesterday, and for a good portion of this morning, this is our high school retreat that's happening out. They're about an hour or so away. I had a little bit of time, myself and James and others, to spend with them on yesterday, and it was a wonderful time. We have a wonderful group of kids going to church here at Antioch. And right in this group, we have some seniors, of course, that are getting ready to graduate here in a little bit, which reminds me that next week, Sunday, is going to be our senior service. So please come prepared to shower your hugs and your kisses and your blessings on that group. And also, just another general reminder, there is a table set up. As soon as you exit out of the auditorium, right on the left, but before the entryway door, there is a table set up really for all of our seniors, and we're encouraging everybody to bless them as God has put in your heart to bless them as they prepare to make their way from high school and transition into college and young adult life. If you don't mind, I want to do great diligence with my short exhortation on this morning. And so if you would stand with me just one more time, I want to read from John chapter 20, verses 24 through 31. John chapter 20, verses 24 through 31. And I'm reading from the good old King James Version Bible. It reads like this: "But Thomas, one of the 12, called Didymus, was not with them when Jesus came. The other disciples therefore said unto him, We have seen the Lord. But he said unto them, Except I see in his hands the print of the nails, and put my finger in the print of the nails, and thrust my hand into his side, I will not believe. And after 8 days, again, his disciples were within, that's in a particular room, and Thomas this time was with them. Then came Jesus, the doors were shut, and stood in the midst and said, "Peace be unto you." Then said he to Thomas, "Reach hither thy finger and behold my hands, and reach hither thy hand and thrust it into my side, and be not faithless, but believing." And Thomas answered and said unto him, "My Lord and my God." Jesus said unto him, "Thomas, because thou hast seen me, thou hast believed." I want you to note that phrase one more time. "Thomas, because thou hast seen me, thou hast believed. Blessed are they that have not seen and yet have believed." Verse 30 and 31, John would wrap up in his writing by saying, "And many other signs truly did Jesus in the presence of his disciples, which are not written in this book. But these are written that ye might believe that Jesus is in fact the Christ, the Son of the living God, and that believing ye might have life through his name." Church, I want to talk to you for a brief minute on this morning from a position, from a title, from a hashtag, "The Scars Tell the Story." The scars tell the story. You may have your seats at this time. A scar, really quickly, is defined as a growth of tissue that marks the spot of a previous injury. It is the end result of the healing process. In other words, it is what that is left behind after the bleeding has stopped, after the stitches have been taken out, after the scab or the scabbing have fallen off, and the wound has properly been healed. So a scar is the end result of a process of healing of a previous injury. And as I think about the reality of where I'm going with this brief exhortation on this morning, the truth is I want to make a declarative statement that all of us, if we're honest, if we look quick enough, all of us have scars. You have scars on your hands, you have scars on your feet, you have scars in your front, you have scars behind. All of us have scars. It's interesting because carefully handled newborn babes are probably and potentially the only human beings on the face of the planet that do not yet have scars. That is to say, if they weren't dropped on the ground when they were coming out, if the doctor or the nurse or the attendant didn't rub their fingernails too much against their skin, if they were not mishandled, the chances are a newborn baby has come out healthy and without blemish. But give it and give them some time. You know what I'm talking about. Sometimes it's not really even up to them if they turn a little bit too much in one corner and they fall off the bed, if they do something and they begin to grow and all of a sudden they begin to crawl and they begin to think that they could climb up on chairs and climb up on tables and become young daredevils, male and females, and they fall, they hit their little heads and they bump their little knees and they scrape their little elbows, and all of a sudden that unscarred being becomes the epitome of scars, scarship. I remember when Isaiah was first born, and I could even go back to Alex for this. You know when you have your first kid, that's the golden egg, right? You parents not gonna help me out. When you have that first baby, that's the golden egg. That's the egg that you don't want to touch the ground. You don't want them. The ground is too dirty and you know what I'm talking? Or you guys forgot? Or some of you yet to have two, you have one. Well, that's great. The first one is the golden egg. But by the time you take your time and as they grow, you realize that one by one they begin to develop little cuts and little bruises, and all of a sudden their little face that didn't have any mark has a little mark or a little gash. All of a sudden their little hands develop little cuts. All of a sudden their little feet develop little cuts. The point I'm trying to make is there is going to come a point in time, even when a newborn baby develops with time certain scars. All of us have scars. Yet while this is true, that we all have scars, if we could be honest for a second and for a moment, we would note that while each scar does in fact have a story, not each one might have significance to us. This is due to the fact that whether, number one, we don't know how we got the scar to begin with. Do you ever find yourself looking at your body or examining yourself sometimes? You just took a shower and you just feel something burning. And you ask yourself, when did I get this cut? You know, you never really know. And so sometimes a scar develops and then you notice it well after the fact. And you're asking yourself the question, when did I even get this cut to begin with? When did I get this bruise on my thigh or this bruise on my hand? So even though there is a story behind the scar, ultimately, it loses its significance because we don't even, number one, know when we got it. But secondly, the reason why sometimes scars hold less significance to us is because maybe when we did get it and we knew about it, it wasn't really a memorable moment. So it was like, you know, how many times have we gotten paper cuts in our lives and that was our core memory to us? No. It was, we got the cut, yeah, we got the scrape, we got the bump, we got the bruise, but it really wasn't a significant, memorable time for us to place deep significance on this particular scar. Church, all that to suggest that the significance of a scar is directly related to the story that goes along with it. Whether it's good or whether it's bad, the significance of that scar is directly proportionate to the story that goes along with it. We would also note that scars come in all forms of shapes and sizes. No one scar is alike from the next. If you look on your hand, the size and the shape of a scar might vary from the size and shape of a scar on your knee. The size and shape of a scar on your knee would vary from the size and shape of a scar on your forehead or your face. They come in all shapes and sizes, and some, to be quite honest with you, run far deeper than others. Some scars are shallow, while some come from deeper wounds. But even as I say that, I want us to understand that I'm not even necessarily talking about physical scars anymore, because oftentimes the idea of a scar is not only that which is physical, but that which is also the result of an injury that we would have incurred mentally, emotionally, and sometimes even spiritually. So whatever, however we look at scars this morning, our need for us to understand and appreciate, if we're honest with ourselves, all of us have scars. And I'm not only just talking in this moment about the physical representation of the healing, but all of us have scars, intimate scars in our lives. But here's the thing, almost all of the time when we think about scars, we don't get to choose where, when, and how we get our scars. And I'm saying more often than not, right? But every now and then, we then have someone who cuts themselves to mimic what they consider to be a cool scar. Harrison Ford, at one point, I'm trying to remember the year, he was voted as the world's, I hope you don't mind me saying this from the pulpit, the world's sexiest man. And it's not that he was unblemished at that point. It's just that when they took a poll, and of course this had to be a poll taken among women, right? But in his heyday, he was deemed to be the world's sexiest man or actor at the time, and he had already accumulated that nice little gash underneath his chin. And the general consensus was there was something really attractive. When I said sexy, you guys, some of you guys watch me funny. There was something attractive about a man who has at least a little a little well-placed gash or scar somewhere about the face or the body. Similarly, in like fashion, closer to my time, we have the other person on the right of the screen, which is Jason Momoa. Jason Momoa is and has been considered for a little while now one of the world's sexiest men and actors. And notice right over his eye, he has a gash right over that little space there. And that's one of those scars. If you do a poll, if you go to Google or wherever, it's generally considered that a little gash over the eye, you know, like Scar from Lion King, a little gash over the eye, or a well-placed scar, or a little something, it makes an individual look a little bit more attractive. And so, contrary to popular belief, there are some individuals that actually go out of their way to mark themselves and create scarring because some scars are deemed beautiful. But for most of us, the truth is we don't get to choose. This is the point I'm trying to make. We don't get to choose when, where, how, and how deep we run into our wounds that ultimately generate our scars. But the reason why it is these individuals choose to do what they do sometimes and what they see is because they deem these scars to be beautiful. I want us to consider really quickly, if you don't mind, and believe it or not, I'm almost through with my brief exhortation. I want you to consider with me really quickly, if you don't mind, consider Jesus's scars. His scars are significant. His scars are memorable. His scars have a story. His scars are ultimately beautiful. And here's the neat thing about the last thing as we consider Jesus' scars. He actually chose his scars. I know you would think for a minute that he wasn't really the one that chose it, but they actually drove some nails and some into his hands and his feet, and they drove a servant, a soldier drove a spear into his side. So he really didn't choose it, but I need for us to understand that he chose to come down here to begin with. He chose to give up divinity. He chose to come to earth. He chose to walk in the plan of God, and he chose to go to the cross. And in him choosing to go to the cross, even though they nailed him, he ultimately chose his scars. And if that wasn't proof enough, when he was resurrected from the dead, there is no sign or reason to believe that the other scars he had on his body was potentially there. It doesn't seem that way. But there was one group of scars that he didn't allow to dissipate when he healed and he came back from the dead. And so we get within the confines of John and in Luke's writings, when Jesus shows up, he shows up with these scars bared in his hands and born is in his feet. The scar is still very much there in his side so that Thomas could touch his hand and touch his feet and to plunge his finger in his side. He chose his scars. And so as I think about this, before we move on to the last slide, as I think about this, I think this is so important for us because I want us to see some things about Jesus' scars that ultimately become so important to us that helps us as well cope with not only our physical, because some of us are in physical pain, but really the emotional and the mental and the spiritual scarring that is still there for many of us. I want us to see that in Jesus' scars, there are some realities and some truths that are there for you and for me. So let's run through this really quickly as we think about what Jesus' scars tell us. I want you to see this. Jesus' scars, number one, tells us that he is very much alive. When he shows up, it's interesting because when he shows up, in the first instance, his disciples didn't really understand what was going on. And so they had a hard time understanding whether he was risen or not. And God gave them all sorts of different signs to prove that Jesus was risen. One of the signs that Jesus himself did was he asked them for food. And we dealt with this a few weeks ago. He asked them for food. And when he took the food and he ate it, they stood there looking to see, let's see if the food will fall down. Because if he's really a ghost doesn't have the capacity to eat. So let's just wait and see. And so he asked them for food. He got the food. He ate it. And nothing falls past him. It goes down, right? So that was sign number one. But then in this instance, Thomas wasn't really there. And so he has to show up 8 days later. And when he shows up for Thomas really. But everybody else that's going to be there, they're going to be impacted. And so notice when he shows up, he doesn't ask any questions. He doesn't begin with anything. The scripture tells us in the scripture reading that Thomas had doubted so much so that when they told Thomas that the Lord had showed up, he said, unless I touch and see the scars, unless I touch and plunge and thrust my finger into his side, I will not believe. So when he shows up 8 days later, he's not necessarily showing up for the others. He is showing up for the one who had still yet to believe in him truly. And he shows up, and immediately as he steps into this space, he turns to Thomas. The doors are closed. There is no way in and out. And he just pops into the middle on the midst of them. And he says, peace be still. You could understand why he would say peace be still. Because if the doors were closed and it was only us in here. And all of a sudden we have somebody that just voiced something in the middle of everybody. I'm telling you what I would be doing probably. Peace be still. Well, who said that? Right? So he calms their spirit. And as he calms their spirit, the very first person he addresses, he says, Thomas, I want you to come and touch my hands. I want you to come and plunge and thrust your finger into my side. And when Thomas steps up, not unlike Peter when he was in the middle of the storm saying unto him, Lord, if it be you, bid me to come out on water. You remember that? And then Jesus would tell him what? Come. And he would start walking on the water. Well, Jesus tells Thomas, come. Come and touch. I need for you to feel something by feeling something. I need for you to truly understand the depth of that, the fact that I am alive by recognizing I am alive. When Jesus rose from the dead, he could have done as he had done for many individuals in time past. He could have risen with a body that was void of any type of scarring to begin with. But when he rose from the dead, he rose with these particular scars. And I want us to see this. Do you not recognize as well that apart from the nail print in his hand and feet, and apart from the piercing or the injury on the side that where they pierced him in his side, do you not also recognize that Jesus must have had, prior to his resurrection, he must have had a lot of other scars and a lot of other injuries about his body? If you go back even before he starts making his trek to Golgotha, they would have taken him and well abused him. That's a nice way of me saying that they gave him a lot of licks. They beat him within an inch of his life, and they used a whip called the flagellum that had several straps at it. And at the end of that flagellum, they would have bone, and they would have metal, and they would have stone. And the lictor, that's the person who would administer the blows, he would reach back, and he would reach forward, and he would lash. And with every single lash, the ends of the whip would grab the flesh and would pull it. Jesus, think about it, had more than just the nail prints in his hands and feet and a gash to the side of his torso. Could you imagine his back? As I was kind of researching this and looking for some images to put on the screen here, it dawned on me that I couldn't put some of the images that I think could have portrayed Jesus in his beating, because it would have cringed some people. And we do have some kids in here, so I didn't want to do that. But could you imagine if you've ever looked, for example, at slavery and those images from slavery where you see those Africans, not African-Americans yet, but those Africans who were brought over in ships, in stocks and in chains, and they were given over to slave masters. And when they didn't do what the slave master would want them to do, and when they wouldn't conform to the concept of slavery, they would be put out in front of everybody and they would be whipped. And over time, they would be whipped and whipped and whipped and whipped. And over time, those wounds would heal and it would leave scars on their backs. And for a long period of time, what they would try to do is they would try to cover up themselves because they didn't want anybody to see that they were whipped, because the sign of a whipping was the sign of a slave that was disobedient and rebellious. And so they would cover their scars as best as they could. They would be afraid, many of them, to talk to their kids or to show their spouses sometimes. They would be afraid to do so, so they would try to cover their bodies because it was oftentimes a mark of shame. But notice when Jesus steps into this reality, he doesn't take this as a mark of shame. He says, listen, I'm going to keep these scars because these aren't a shame for me to have these. These are a sign and proof that I am, in fact, very much alive and real. You know what this also tells me, church? When you think about the scars of Jesus, the fact that you could look down at your own scars is proof positive that you're still alive. And some of us have some really deep scars. And I'm talking physically and metaphorically. Some of us have some really deep scars. But the fact that you could still look at your scar and touch it, the fact that you could still think about your scar, and the fact that you could still breathe and think through that stuff is proof positive that the scar and the injury did not kill you. So it's proof that I am more powerful than death. It's proof. Jesus' scars are proof that I am more powerful than the worst that the world could throw at me. It's proof positive that he is very much truly alive. Number two, his scars are proof to us that he knows our pain. You think about serving God or from any type of religious sense, you think about deities that don't really identify with your pain. Jesus' scars is proof that he could understand, and he does understand what you and I go through, not only metaphorically speaking, but also very much physically speaking. He knows what it is to endure pain. He knows what it's like to sweat. He knows what it's like to be frustrated. He knows what it's like to be angry. He knows what it's like to be anxious. He knows what it's like to be depressed. He knows what it's like to have people turn their back on him. He knows what it's like to be betrayed. He knows what it's like to be denied. He knows what it's like to be spat upon. He knows what it's like to be crucified. He knows what it is like. And so his scars are proof that I know your pain. I could hear the Hebrew writer say, for we have not an high priest that cannot be touched with the feelings of our infirmities. Whatever you are going through, his scars says, you could come to me because I know. But number three, as I hasten, because I said we were going to be quick. Number three, his scars are a sign of the fact that he has paid our debt. When he comes and you see his scars, it's an indication that the debt for sin on our behalf has been dealt with. But lest I take up too much of your time, here's the fourth one. His scars are proof that he has secured our victory. I want to read this text and I'll be done. Thomas, could you make your way up? I want to read this text into your hearing. It's found actually in the book of Revelation, the chapter is 5. This text blew me away as I was researching for this, because it's one thing to think about Jesus having these scars on this side of heaven. But then John indicates something in his writing of this revelation that he would have received from the Lord in chapter 5, beginning at verse number 1. And I saw in the right hand of him that sat on the throne a book written within and on the backside, sealed with 7 seals. And I saw a strong angel, a mighty angel, proclaiming with a loud voice, who is worthy to open the book and to loose the seals thereof? And no man in heaven, nor earth, neither under the earth, was able to open the book, neither look into it. Then it says, and I wept, this is John talking, and I wept much because no man was found worthy to open and to read the book, neither to look therein. And one of the elders said unto me, weep not, hear it. Behold, the Lion of the tribe of Judah, the Root of David, had prevailed to open the book and to loose the 7 seals thereof. And in verse number 6, and I beheld, and lo, in the midst of the throne of the 4 beasts and in the midst of the elders stood a lamb as it had been slain. Don't miss that. In the midst of the magnificence and the majesty of the throne room, I saw a lamb that stood up as if it had been slain, having seven horns and seven eyes, which are the seven spirits of God sent forth into all the earth. And he came and took the book out of the right hand of him that sat upon the throne. And when he had taken the book, the four beasts and the 24, that's the 24 elders, fell down before the Lamb, having every one of them harps and golden vials full of odors, which are the prayers of the saints. And they sung a new song, saying, "Thou art worthy to take the book. Thou art worthy to take the book. Thou art worthy to take the book and to open the seals thereof. For thou wast slain and hast redeemed us to God by the blood out of every kindred and tongue and people and nation, and hast made us unto God kings and priests." So his scars are chosen in heaven as a means of proof that victory belongs to me. He didn't have to keep it, but he keeps it anyway. He didn't have to do it, but he did it anyway. And his scars are proof positive that not only is he alive, not only does he know our pain, not only has he paid the debt, but victory is ours in him. Church, if you are here this morning and you're living, you know, on this side of heaven, we still have struggle. You know, on this side of heaven, we still have pain. You know, on this side of heaven, we still have sorrow. On this side of heaven, we still have death. On this side of heaven, we still have loss. But there's going to come a point in time when the Lamb that was slain, who is very much alive, will come, and he will say unto us, "Come and receive the inheritance prepared for you before the foundation of the world. Blessed of my Father, come." And we will repeat in return. I know we don't like the whole idea of repeat after me, but when he says what he says to us, we will repeat these words: "Worthy are the Lamb that was slain. Worthy is the Lamb that was slain. Holy, holy," you guys not with me, "holy, holy, holy, Lord God Almighty, who was and who is to come." Because his scars, truly tells his story of our, listen to me and listen to me, I'm done. Thomas, you need to start singing. His scars tells his story of our victory. Would you stand with me and sing? Would you stand with me and praise? Would you stand with me and worship the Lamb that was slain?